This is Vikram Krishna for PodTech India. I'm in Dharamsala in the north of India, where the summit conference on free information infrastructure is taking place, hosted by the AirJaldi Mesh Network. It's pretty cold over here. It's raining, it's thundering, lightning, and in all this electricity in the air, there's a lot of excitement. And among the exciting people that I'm meeting over here is somebody who's intimately involved with the growth of free information infrastructures in Africa.
Okay, so tell me about yourself and about the Meraka Institute.
Okay, my name is Sherin John Isaac. I am a senior researcher at the African Advanced Institute for ICT, which is otherwise known as the Meraka Institute. Currently, this institute is based in South Africa, but the scope of its operations is the whole African continent. My background is I'm an engineer by profession, telecommunications particularly, and the role that I play in the institute is driving the human capacity development program. I'm also heading the socioeconomic unit of a research area called Wireless Africa, which is very much interested in mesh networks, which is why I'm in Dharamsala for the AirJaldi conference. So in a nutshell, that's about me and my background.
Do you actually operate wireless mesh networks in Africa, or are you promoting them in Africa, or are there any in Africa?
Yes, there are wireless mesh networks in Africa. We are running one of them in a deep rural area in South Africa. We have on we are also running another one in an urban area in Pretoria, which is the capital of South Africa. We have plans for 10 other such wireless mesh deployments in the rest of South Africa. But what we are really interested in is seeing a community-based drive for the rural areas of the whole continent of Africa, in which we're talking about 450 million people. That is our target group that we would like to build a multi-stakeholder partnership that will comprehensively address broadband connectivity to these rural areas. We believe that broadband connectivity is very important because there's very high illiteracy, in adult illiteracy in Africa. There are some countries like in Niger where over 80% of the adult population are textually illiterate. So we believe that these are communities that will benefit a whole lot better in terms of accessing information and generating content if they use multimedia approaches. And there's various research in multimedia, searching, tagging, so on like that, that's now making this thing viable. However, in our current technology space, multimedia requires broadband.
That's right.
And that's why we believe, above all, our rural areas actually need broadband.
You have major structural issues in the pricing of broadband over most of Africa. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, in many areas, connectivity is still perceived to be a luxury item. This is changing after the World Summit on Information Society. Now, if basic connectivity is viewed as a luxury item, what more broadband connectivity? So, hence, they're saying, I mean, a lot of governments, a lot of entities believe, I mean, the people are very poor. Who's going to pay for this thing, right? So, there's opposition to, I mean, now, I think that the idea is there that broadband is good, okay? But how do you roll out this broadband? How do you price this broadband? How do you make sure that people pay for it? How do you sustain this? That seems to be the major issue. In some countries, there's also regulatory hindrances that prevent the rollout of broadband communications. In some countries, voice over IP, for example, is still, in Africa, is still illegal. Therefore, network rollouts tend to go at the pace and the plans of established telecommunications operators. And we have the situation where, obviously, for rural Africa, I mean, a whole lot of the continent lives, there are many, many countries where over 80% of the population lives on under $2 a day, right? So, typically these rural areas are not perceived to be a market.
Yes.
And because it's not perceived to be a market, I mean, people think that broadband in these areas should be a charity case. And
are you bringing some solutions to the summit, or are you here to learn what solutions are being discussed?
Well, in terms of like the network technology, we're interested in some of the network technology because we believe that wireless mesh networks allows community-driven network initiatives, roll-your-own type of network initiatives. Your Wi-Fi wireless mesh networks is one instance of this. There could be other types of networks. So we're interested in this. We're interested in what the Dharamsala network has accomplished in terms of voice of the IP, the extent of its coverage. Obviously, the terrain here is very hilly. The way that they've managed to engage the community in this. We would also be interested in how you could have some suitable business models so that private entrepreneurs and so on could also be involved in this rollout. So, yes, we have come to learn. For me particularly, it's very important that I meet some of the people who are coming to the summit from all over the world. I want to know who are all the players. I want to introduce our institute to them. I want to know where they could possibly fit in an Africa-wide multi-stakeholder partnership that is under the African Union, for example. So that multi-stakeholder partnership is still in its conceptualization phase, so there's nothing concrete written down on this, but it's to engage early possible people who can contribute to this thing. I mean, there's a lot of thought leadership happening in the world, right? People have been doing things. We would rather not reinvent the wheel. We'd rather know how do we get everybody to work together. Typically in Africa, what happens is that somebody starts a small pilot somewhere there, and then they tell everybody, come join us. We're doing great things. And it's true, they are doing great things. I would rather now that we all said, come, let's join this big multi-stakeholder partnership and let's put together all the systems, structures, and know-how and everything that's necessary to enable, to solve this 450 million people problem, say within the next 5-10 years. Is it possible? I think it's possible, especially if it's a grassroots initiative.
When you talk about 450 million people who are underprivileged, are you also including those who are underprivileged or lack privileges entirely due to the fact that they have certain disabilities?
Well, the idea about disabilities and exclusion, right, is also very important for us because we want all people to be included in this. Right now our focus in terms of my unit is particularly the network access side, right? However, we believe that the actual connectivity, even though it's a very important part of improving people's lives, is only a very small part, small but important part. The major thing that will really improve people's lives, and we're talking about disabled people, we're talking about farmers, we're talking about fishermen, we're talking about the illiterate and so on, is applications that will add meaning to their life, that will improve their quality of life, that will give them new opportunities, that will make them wealthier, healthier, happier, that type of stuff. And these applications, some have been written, but I think a lot of effort still needs to be spent in creating those actual meaningful applications. So we're interested in that. What we'd like the 450 million people stakeholder partnership to do is actually create those kind of models and those kind of applications in a concerted effort. So yes, we are interested in the disabled.
And do you see the Miraka Institute taking a leadership role in this or a partnership role? How would you define it?
Well, the Miraka Institute would be playing a partnership role. It would be one of the partners in this. Right now, it may be playing a leadership role in getting the African Union buy-in for this multi-stakeholder partnership. The Miraka Institute has slightly better resources than one of the programs of the Africa Union called the New Program for Africa's Development, NEPAD. So we would like this multi-stakeholder partnership to be anchored in NEPAD, under the NEPAD structures, because this is a structure that has the mandate and so on. But in driving this thing, yes, the Miraka Institute, I think in its initial stages at least, will be expending quite a bit of effort in this. really the effort should be expanded by a more neutral secretariat that has yet to be established. And really we want all the partners in this partnership to be real go-getters
right,
in this thing. Where the Miraka Institute comes in is that we believe that these efforts has to be strongly linked to R&D. It's very important to link it to R&D for far-sighted R&D for future products that are specifically tailored to this African problem. But it's also so that the human capacity on the continent can be built up. If the solutions come from elsewhere, right, then we'll still as a continent be facing brain drain.
Right. Right?
There's, the institutions are not created that will keep these people over here in meaningful things that change their lives. So that's why we believe, yes, the Miraka Institute should be strongly linked to this thing. Driving it, yes, maybe in the initial stages, but our real focus is the R&D side of it. So the implementation side of it, we want that to happen through the multi-stakeholder partnership, through the NGOs, through the civil society, through the governments, and through the network of geeks that are out there as well. Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Pleasure.
Sharon, that sounded really encouraging. This is Vikram Krishna from PodTech India. I was in conversation with Sharon John Isaac of the Miraka Institute in South Africa.